Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John, and Sue.
Welcome, guys, to Pottercast number 170. We are very old here at Pottercast. I'm Melissa. I'm here with only John and Frack this week because Sue has had a family issue that she has got to take care of. So she will be present in one of the segments, right? The second part of our interview.
Yes.
Is
for the back in town.
What else is in the show? We have a bit by bit for chapter, or part of chapter 15 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. At this rate, we'll be done with the book in about 40 years when Joe comes out with, you know, Harry Potter Part 8.
We all see you there.
Yeah.
And then we'll get started on that one.
And before we do any of that, we're going to do our news, right?
Oh, but
take it away,
Sue's for the news.
No. We need Sue's for the news, and she's not here, so we're going to fake it, and I'll be a poor replacement, but Melissa's going to be Sue's.
Okay. Let's hear some news.
Okay, some news, Melissa. That doesn't sound nearly
your
as
name
good.
Doesn't rhyme with news.
It doesn't. It doesn't at all.
No.
Okay. Hi, on the Harry Potter news this week. Leaky got a redesign. No, kidding. Though it did.
Uh-huh.
And we're having some technical problems, so please, everybody, hold on tight. It'll be fixed soon, we promise. But
what's
seriously...
I have no idea.
Oh, we just
Melissa,
have
can you hear us?
Little quirks that always happen when you do a redesign. So if you have any problems on Leaky, just hold tight, guys. We'll be back soon.
Yay.
Okay. Seriously, folks, this week, number 5 on our news, I want to say Sue's news, on our news list is Emma Watson. Emma Watson was in Flair magazine this week. A beautiful photo spread that shows Ms. Emma in another variety of beautiful frocks. And she talks a little bit about being famous, and she says, she reveals that it's very hard, it's very difficult being famous, but those pictures are gorgeous, so you should really go check them out. They're in our image galleries, and we say thank you to EmmaWatson.net, our partner
for
providing
them
to us. Yes, partner in order crime.
Orderness.
Yeah. She talks about the film, she talks about her co-stars. It's a nice little article you should go check out.
Yeah. Hard
being
famous.
None of you have read.
It is hard being famous.
You know, at the after party, how hard it was for us being famous, and she sympathized.
Dozens.
She told me
people.
That I have to be careful of who I'm friends with because people just want to be friends with you.
She left patronizing at you and walked away, didn't she?
I did get a little.
Did you even talk?
No. No.
You know, it's such
a
funny
lie.
It's such a funny story.
It's not that funny.
Save it for the wrap-up.
Okay. Number 4, we actually have, guys, Dumbledore's Thick Woolen Socks. The Opal Sock Yarn Company has just debuted. I don't know if you've noticed. Harry Potter yarn. Now, it's not yarn that says Harry Potter on it. It's just yarn. And they're putting up these sock patterns. There's Ron socks, Harry. There's a bunch of options. You can go check out Leaky for the links to that. And they have this big fluffy pair of socks that really do look like they would be Dumbledore's knitted big fluffy socks that he would like.
Are they magical yarn, or what makes this Harry Potter yarn?
I don't know, to be honest.
It's like coming out with like mustard and being like, it's Harry Potter mustard.
But it doesn't like
true.
Say this is, you know, this is Harry Potter yarn. It's just
it's just being marketed as Harry Potter yarn.
It's British yarn that is magical.
No, it's all colored yarns, and there's a wrapper around it that says Harry Potter. So I don't, honestly, it's.
You know, this is what's weird, is that, have you ever been to, like, Home Depot and go to the paint section, and they have all the different colors of paints, and then they have a whole wall that says Disney paint, and they have, like, a list of color and, like, color swatches or whatever. And there is nothing particularly about, like, Disney. They're just colors that Disney decided we approve these colors. You will use these.
Yeah, it's like Pluto yellow, and you get to pay $20 extra for the word Pluto.
I mean,
yeah.
Honest to God, just a color. It's like you can't brand a color.
Or yeah, but
like you could brand yarn.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's interesting. They have them for different like characters, so they're called skeins of wool. And so, for instance, the Tonks skein is all really bright pinks and oranges and yellows and whatnot. Then you have the Harry and Ron, and I give up. There's nothing really Harry and Ronish about those colors. The Hedwig one is all grays and whites and such.
Oh,
so,
shocking!
So
she's a white owl. I get it.
They are kind of themed. You have the Lupin one. It's very yellowish and hobnobbly looking.
Hobnobbly?
Yeah, it looks kind of, the sock they're showing is all like flecked with spots when it's put together. It's really strange.
If there was Lupin blood, it should be flecked with like red, like blood red.
Not blood. Like, who said anything about blood?
Well, if it's Lupin, because he's constantly getting torn up by his own claws.
Ron's is orange. Harry's for some crazy reason is blue and pink. Don't understand
what?
It at all. Yeah, I don't know. Go
blue and
Opal,
pink.
opalsakyan.com/HarryPotterSlideshow.html. You can check all this stuff out.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, it doesn't
crazy.
All right. You could also, if you want some other knitting patterns to follow, you could check out TLC Crafts.
Yeah.
Where we have lots
the
and lots of
nice.
Okay, more in the product area.
Nice. You know, yeah. The TLC Crafty Witch has helped me with my Halloween costume this year. I decided that Mr. Hammer might be a little difficult, so I'm going as a house elf.
Oh, no.
And they've helped me come up with the perfect garment. So I'm worried about temperature. Might be a bit chilly.
To wear a towel.
You know she's going to kill you. You understand this.
Well, I'm going to the Halloween parties with Bree this year, and Bree is going as Sue with a whip.
John
like
Noe.
A little partner.
You can't do that when she's not here to defend herself. Let's move on.
Okay.
Yes, we're moving on. Number three on the list is more product stuff. The Noble Collection, courtesy of Skyball, strangely, released...
Skyball?
Yes, they were in Skyball. I know. You okay?
I love Skymall.
Skymall, it's so obscure.
They're still selling those hot dog toasters.
They are. Okay, Barney. They have two new items. The Noble Collection has released, you see pictures of Marvel or Ring, the Slytherin Ring. So not
how
Slytherin.
I pictured it.
No, it's actually, it's cool. You can see a picture of it right on Leaky. It looks like two golden mouthless snakes reaching up to grab the pyramid-shaped black.
Yeah.
Stone, and if you look, there's like a smoke etched, not even etched, but a smoky image of the Deathly Hallows sign on it.
Yeah, it's like underneath the like engraved at the bottom. It looks really cool.
Yeah. I heard that to make it more authentic, they're actually selling those rings like pre-contaminated with some kind of carcinogen that will actually make your arm fall off if you attempt
and wither.
To wear it. Yeah, only one in every 1,000 though, so just cross your fingers.
Or because it's the last time you're going to be able to do it, so. No, but actually, I don't think this is going to be true to the movie. I saw the one that they were doing in the movie. I don't. I think it's a little bit more. It's less glossy looking than this. This is like pre-destruction ring.
Yeah.
You know. They also had a picture of a locket, which doesn't look at all like a Slytherin locket.
No.
I kind of like it though.
It's interesting. Isn't that the one that's like covered in like some kind of
like
runes and things?
I think this is going to be the one you find at the bottom of the basin. Because we don't.
Oh,
really get...
it is! It
yeah.
is. Good call.
Yeah.
We're not going to see that locket until the next film.
Right.
You got it. And it totally is because they have crystals in the cave.
Right. You're right. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks more like
is.
The cave than anything
cave
else.
Cave is
yeah.
so weird. It's like
what?
It's like kryptonite. Cave like
it is
Superman Starship. Returns when they make the island out of kryptonite and all like
I like the crystal. I think it's a great idea, like the geodes and sitting in the cave. That's really cool.
I just like the idea that Riddle takes these kids down to this cave. It's grand, but it's also a little understated too. It's just like a naturally occurring kind of thing. Like I don't know where you'd find that kind of geographical
I think he made that. like, once he took him down there, and then when he was setting up the Horcrux, you know, thing, I think he could conjure some, like, weird...
I mean, I could see that if that was growth. The story, but I never interpreted that
it
as
probably,
part of the story.
It probably doesn't look so grand from the outside. I mean, when you get inside these caves, it's usually pretty mineral rich. You know, it looks like...
Yeah, and then if you think about it, like, crystals and minerals and stuff like that, they grow much faster, and they actually do grow type of thing. So you can, like, if he's going to conjure some sort of island in the middle of that cave, of course you can enchant it, you know, to, you know, it just seems more feasible than, like, making rocks out of nothing.
Well, I don't know. It looks like, if you look at some of the pictures of it and what we've seen of it, it looks very tropical where they are. I know it's supposed to be in Scotland or England or I don't know where they're supposed to be. When I was in Hawaii, it looks very similar to some of the things I've seen in Hawaii, which is bizarre. So, I don't know. I buy it.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it'll look awesome. Like, it always does look awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I like subtlety sometimes for things instead of just...
Shocking.
Boom, 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 fireworks everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, guys, there is a new charity auction. This is our number two item. There's a new charity auction, as we talked about last week, at Book Aid, the organization that Leaky often benefits. Alan Rickman, who plays Professor Snape in the movies, as well as Robbie Coltrane, who plays Professor Hagrid in the movies, donated items. Alan Rickman donated an inscribed version of the book, Blink of an Eye, and he writes on the inside, Francis Ford Coppola says it in the foreword. Walter pretends to be writing about film editing, but really it's about life. He is one of the greatest teachers I have been lucky enough to spend time with, Alan Rickman. Robbie Coltrane donated a 1994 folio of Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn, and he wrote inside, this book seems, when I was a boy, to be speaking directly to me. The fact that the main character was a boy who could see through adult pretensions, who was honest without being goody-goody, and had all these adventures made me wish for a life like this. Now that I am supposedly a grown-up, I realize what a witty, evocative, and original piece of literature it was. Enjoy, Robbie Coltrane. So there's an eBay auction for these items going on October 23rd.
Very nice.
You want an update on how it's going?
Yes, tell us.
I'll tell you right now. Oh, gosh, there's many, many items, actually. Huckleberry Finn, signed by Robbie Coltrane, is currently for £67. It's not even that much. The In the Blink of an Eye by Walter Murch, which is the one signed by Alan Rickman, that one is going for £265, which is about $500.
Nice.
Oh, you got
I'll buy it.
To say. No, you won't.
Sounds pretty cool, though. If I had the money.
That's like the least exciting news item ever. You're all like, nice. Yay!
No, what the hell?
No, it's great. They're raising money for Book Aid is a wonderful organization. They set up libraries in countries that need them all around the world. J.K. Rowling has offered them support many, many times. Leaky has given over $60,000 to them over the past couple of years. And we have another fundraiser for them coming with Jingle Spells too. Oh
heck yeah, Jingle Spells.
Uh-oh, what?
Jingle Spells 2.
Someone let Moochka out of the bag.
I should really do a hidden track and record her meowing a couple times.
Oh, let me do it. When we come out there for New York, I'm going to chase her around with the microphone.
Meow, meow, meow. Yes. So the album will already be mastered by the time you're in New York.
Oh, well, maybe it's a special, like, for
it'll be
an
iTunes
100
bonus.
People. Exactly. The first 100 people who buy the album will get exclusive.
Okay, our number one news item for the week is our friend Daniel Radcliffe. He is going to be on Inside the Actors Studio. Have you guys ever watched Inside the Actors Studio?
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's
a fun show.
And it's really an honor. I mean, actors never say no to it. They can't do it right when the show wants them to, but it's considered a respect mark, a high water mark of your career if you are going on Inside the Actors Studio. To do so before you're 20 years old is... quite.
Oh, for sure.
A huge achievement. Yeah. So it's really cool. It's filmed at Pace University, and the Pace newspaper did a report on it. And we have several things that Dan Radcliffe has said about Deathly Hallows. One of them seems to indicate that they will be the actors in the epilogue in Deathly Hallows.
Nice.
Which they have to be. I'm sorry. They
can age them. They'll be fine.
They'll be fine. I would put a lot of money on that. But he said about the epilogue that it will be a source of entertainment to see Ron and Hermione together. In the epilogue, which I like,
sure.
Of course. He also spoke about Alfonso Cuarón's directing style. He said, You want somebody that you can suggest things to, not someone you're intimidated by. You also want somebody who will turn to you after a take and say, that was not very good at all. That's how you know you can trust his judgment, which I thought was interesting.
Nice.
So, you know, now they were like 12 and 13 when they worked with Alfonso Cuarón. So,
so they were saying that he was that kind of person?
Yeah.
They weren't intimidated by him?
Mm-hmm. No, they weren't intimidated by him, but also that he would tell them, like, that wasn't good. We need to do it again.
It makes me wonder who they were intimidated by.
I don't know.
Think they were intimidated by Chris Columbus.
No.
Might as well be your uncle.
Christopher Columbus, he discovered America.
No, he didn't, actually.
I know. He's just a director.
Yeah. I can't imagine David Yates intimidating anybody. Nothing intimidating about that man. He's a very soft-spoken guy. The newspaper goes on to say about the filming that Dan talks about his imagination and the ways that he lives in the world through it. He says that he has this fascination with things in the world. Like he likes to observe strange things like how a door closes or the grates on a subway platform. And he says that he and Harry Potter have many things in common, including very good friends.
Aw.
Aw, that's cool.
Hey, so I have some Dan Radcliffe news.
Uh-oh.
Did you hear
Uh-oh.
who is being tapped apparently already to
yes, I did.
Take over his role
it's a rumor.
For Radcliffe?
It's a rumor.
It's oh my god, it's the worst rumor ever.
But could it be for real?
It could be for real. Think about it. Okay, the rumor is Zac Efron of High School Musical fame. Think about it.
Oh my god, I can't even
continue.
I saw an interview. He said it was a rumor.
Yeah, he said it was a rumor. He said no.
He did. And that's, oh, it's so funny you mentioned that, because the one time I'm flipping channels, and I flip over to TMZ, which I always like, I hate TMZ, you're killing it, get off! It sucked me in, because it was like, true or false, and we're like, Kuchoo! And then they would have all these things that were rumors.
And then they
answer, and he's like, I haven't even been approached. So it's not that he wouldn't do it, he said he hasn't been approached.
See, there you go.
Oh.
It's not that he didn't shut it down, he said, I wouldn't do it. Because think about it, a superstar from a major family chain does something to break out of the family chain mold.
Oh, God,
and,
yeah.
You know, like, and it's a serious role. It's not a gimmick casting, you don't do it if you're not a serious actor.
But
you know?
The question
he said, he didn't say, I turned it down, he said, I wasn't even approached, so.
Well, here's probably the thing, he's probably at some point expressed interest. And they're probably all, oh, God, here's our awesome production, our serious play, and we're going to get this guy who's from Disney movies.
I think he's kind of too old for it, to be honest.
Too old
Alan
for
String
it?
Is Alan String is a 16-year-old. Zac Efron doesn't look 16 at all.
He's been playing high schoolers.
Yeah, okay. In High School Musical, when everybody suspends reality because it's Zac Efron, and who cares?
Wait, is Zac Efron the guy from Hairspray?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a very good actor. Yeah, I don't know. As high as the craziness is for Dan to be naked in a show.
Yeah.
I think they would have to like pre-screen every attendee
titties.
Oh my god. Yeah, I wouldn't want to go within ten blocks of that theater.
Yeah.
Just for the mania. I'm not talking. I mean, whatever. Zac Efron.
Efron.
See how fast that stuff goes on YouTube.
But that's what we are all saying about dance stuff, you know? And I have yet to see anything pop up on YouTube.
Oh, have you been searching,
searching
a
lot? For it, John?
No, I have alerts set up, actually. it will be sent right SMS alert to my phone.
Okay.
But as soon as something were to go online, Leaky probably would be some of the first people to be emailed about it.
I don't know.
We haven't seen anything.
Well, let's see. I'm doing a search. This is terrible.
Melissa, Nelly.
Perverted. Oh, I can't do this. I can't. I can't go through. I can't do the search.
I can't.
I want to know what you were going to search for.
Equus.
Oh, Equus.
What?
Yes, Equus. What would you search for?
Dan Radcliffe junk shot.
John.
Daniel Radcliffe to show off his dong with a horse.
John!
That's the first result that comes up.
You search?
Terrible. Yeah.
Oh, you're terrible. Okay, I can't do this. Okay,
let's
get out of this. We're destroying the news segment without Sue. We gotta go.
Sue's like,
goodbye.
What happened?
We're done. That was number one.
Okay.
This is the end. What's coming up?
Coming up next on an all-new podcast, we have a second part of the interview, Miss Sue. Melissa.
Miss Sue and Melissa.
Talking about life, fame, writing novels.
Fortune.
Your favorite kind of pizza.
No novels. What novels?
All of this and more, including another exciting Bit by Bit, chapter 15.
Oh, yeah.
The Goblin.
Bit by Bit!
Super exciting.
God, it's been a year and a half. We're on chapter 15. This is terrifying. Okay.
It's taking us longer to talk about it than it took Joe to write it.
It is! Oh,
honestly,
my God, that's terrible.
This is poor.
Okay, goodbye.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
Hello, everybody. It's Bit by Bit. We're going to do the beginning of chapter 15 as far as we get anyway. What happens right before this bit? Do we remember?
Right before this bit is chapter 14.
Thank you, John.
We're talking all about Grigorovich.
Grigorovich. Okay.
Grigorovich.
So, yeah. Has Ron... Ron hasn't left yet.
Ron leaves at the end of this chapter, chapter 15.
Yeah, Ron leaves at this chapter.
I hate the end of this chapter. This is a long chapter.
A lot happens in this chapter.
Dragging long chapter.
It's a very needy chapter.
Well, let's see how much we get through in 20 minutes, and then we'll stop.
Yeah.
Okay. So Harry's fooling around with the new wand, and he can't make it work.
Wow. That's a funny sentence.
I set that right up for you, John.
too many opportunities. I just have to take none and move on. Yes, he's fooling around with his wand, can't get it to work.
Well,
tries the charm.
Is it a new wand, or is it he's using Hermione's at this point?
No, it's the one, is it Hermione's, or is it the one?
No, he has his own wand still?
No.
Because
yeah.
He hasn't lost his wand yet. No.
My head is in another chapter.
I'm confused.
My head is elsewhere.
The chapter begins early the next morning after Harry has his vision / dream of Grigorovich. And Ron is doing better finally with his wounds and everything. And so they agree not to stay in one spot too long. And so then it's starting up the whole parade of them just apparating in and out of places and bringing up the charms and whatnot. And they apparate into to a little forest right by a village, and Harry goes in town under the invisibility cloak, but he comes back with no food because of Dementors. And then they're all like, but you can make a Patronus, but he couldn't conjure his Patronus. And then I guess they're talking about it, and then they talk about the locket, and Hermione pretty much realizes that the locket could have some effect on that, and when he takes it off, he feels much better, like he can conjure like a million Patronuses.
This is very particularly, I mean, you glossed over a very specific detail, is that Ron's was all torn up about the fact that he wanted a bacon sandwich, which I can relate to.
Yeah.
And I wonder about the bacon sandwich, because it's not a very popular sandwich over here.
Seriously having this conversation right now?
Well, I'm kind of hungry, but a bacon sandwich is it's just a funny thing to be, have your favorite food to be.
Well, it's just Ron, like it says later in this chapter, Ron has always had the comfort of Mrs. Weasley's cooking, and when he's not under that roof, he has the army of house elves cooking. So he's never had to deal with this long stint of without food. Or Harry grew up on a regular basis of being getting Dudley scraps or not even getting anything at all, locked up in his room or under the cupboard, and Hermione just being. Hermione, just a very understanding nature, is kind of aware of the situation. And Ron needs those creature comforts for him to really kind of function. This is very new to him.
And I love this chapter about food because we actually really delve into the idea that, food just doesn't come out of thin air. And, you have to really know what you're doing with magic if you want to conjure food, because you have to be able to come up with the ingredients first. And, there's magic that will help you prepare food and things, but, I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, it brings a little bit more grit or reality to the whole magic stuff. I love that kind of stuff. It's kind of like you still have to go grocery shopping, but instead of having a blender, you have a spell. And so you can just get to the point where you can just conjure all the ingredients together and then, make stuff. So
it's a wonder that there's not a whole lot of theft in the Wizarding World, because you could just accio whatever you want from anybody's yard, and that'd be really hard to come up with,
there's charms against those things.
Yeah,
it
balances itself out, just like how you can't conjure, you can't, make food out of nothing at the same time. It's like, if you can...
What's to keep you... from occupying somebody's food from across the room.
They put a protective charm on their house.
Frankie's lunch. You tell me if they have to do a spell every time they have something that they don't want somebody else to take?
It's probably
they can put a charm
just,
around their house.
Yeah,
their
it's probably just
around their
like
property.
A wall for them. It's just standard procedure.
Well, like in this
same
chapter,
thing in the room of requirement when they go into the room of requirement and they try to get the tiara, nothing happens when he Akio's it.
Yeah.
You know?
In this chapter, they did Akio fish.
Yeah, because the fish didn't put protective charms on themselves.
Well, those are just stupid fish.
They are very stupid fish. Well, the point is these guys are in the woods, and they're tired and cranky and hungry, and it highlights the fact that they're these three teenagers who really don't have any clue what they're doing, where they're going. Harry's grasping in the dark for an idea about what to do next.
Yeah.
So Harry thinks about the orphanage where Riddle been born, where he'd been educated, which is Hogwarts, at Borgin and Burke's where he worked, and then Albania where he spent his years. And Ron, jumping on this is, let's go to Albania. It shouldn't take more than an afternoon to search an entire country. Just, they're all pissed at each other.
Ron's
they're not having a good time.
They're all just annoyed at each other.
Well, Ron the most. This is what Joe says about it. Ron had always been used to three delicious meals a day, courtesy of his mother or the Hogwarts house elves, and hunger made him both unreasonable and irascible. Whenever lack of food coincided with his turn to wear the Horcrux, he became downright unpleasant.
Well, and he's also a 17-year-old boy tromping around with his crush and, his third wheel, and it's, frustrating, close quarters.
Yeah, and and another thing is that isn't it after that's when they start deciding to switch the Horcrux around when they realize the effect that it has when Harry couldn't produce his Patronus, which is something he was able to do at 13. Now 4 years later, he can't.
That's
like
gotta
what?
Be really disconcerting.
Yeah,
and the point when Harry starts to get suspicious of Ron after Dobby showed up and told him that Ron would try to take the Horcrux from him and not to trust him. And then when Ron asks for it...
He put crumbs on Ron's bed?
Yes, exactly.
Stupid. Anywho.
Okay.
A pure Lord of the Rings reference. You made me listen to Kenneth Hodge, John. this is when they decide to. Now, how far do they actually go when they're looking for the Horcruxes?
Well, the orphanage. They looked for the records, and they found out that the orphanage had been destroyed, which is a detail I forgot. Mm-hmm. So the orphanage. Hermione says we could try digging in the foundations. They're like, nah.
That's not
okay.
Yeah.
So they're just totally without ideas, and then. Eventually, Harry's scar starts going again.
One thing that I wonder if they ever considered, and if it would have been possible, but what if, you could go back in time, on that foundation to when the orphanage existed? And, if you found the Horcrux, in the past and brought it back into the future... And would you still be able to destroy that Horcrux and have that be the end of it?
Well, think it depends if by taking it out of the past, you've altered reality so much that the Horcrux would no longer exist in your present.
Yeah, it's one of those, it depends on your view on time travel, if it's a stream or if it's circular.
Yeah.
I think the fun narrative is the circular stuff, which I think Joe kind of embraces in the third book.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So
you could go back and find the Horcrux and then hide it in a drawer and then go back in present and go back to that drawer and be like, there it is. And it'd still be there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Harry.
Yeah, John, that's brilliant.
Harry's scar acts up again?
Yes.
I don't remember. I don't remember the vision he got for that time.
Yeah, no, he just kept seeing Grindelwald's face.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was just reminding him of this, of this person. It was like when you can't place somebody.
Yes.
And then bothering
you. He doesn't remember that he saw that picture.
Grindelwald has golden curls and merry
and a bright smile.
So he's an attractive person.
Yes, most evil people kind of are.
So disarming.
Like, Voldemort was attractive until he deformed his face.
Until he destroyed himself, yeah.
Do you think Voldemort would be a more interesting villain if he didn't just look like evil incarnate?
No, because the fact that he was beautiful and he slowly decayed himself really is compelling, in my opinion.
Yeah, that will be very interesting to see in Half-Blood Prince. Because to really, to go back in, because no one knows watching the films that he used to be attractive or whatever. I mean, you could think back to Chamber of Secrets, but to see it, if we get to see it kind of gradually happen, that'll be really interesting.
Are they going to age down Ralph Fiennes? How are they doing this?
Aren't they?
No.
Didn't they cast three?
They're not using Christian Coulson, though, right?
No.
I think they cast another guy. He has to check. I forgot.
No, I think they did too, because I remember it was, they have the young Voldemort, the teenage Voldemort, and then they have Ralph Fiennes. Then he can...
Well, it's not a teenage. I don't think they're doing that scene. I think it's a when he goes for the job, maybe.
Mm.
Oh, okay.
Because that's important. I don't know.
Well, then Ralph Fiennes could play that, because he's already looking weird when he goes for the job.
Yeah, but not as much. So I guess they could have given him a nose, you know?
He still has one nostril lobe left.
What if we, like, found out that, Voldemort lost his nose in, like, a battle, and, like, all he was left was that little...
That's why he has a snake face?
Yeah.
He tried to transfigure himself into a snake, and didn't work out.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Maybe he was making a Polyjuice potion with his friends in the bathroom, and accidentally a piece of snake fell into his potion, and he turned into a snake, and then it got stuck.
Yeah, I bet that
Moving
happened.
On.
So they get an argument again.
Hear voices. Yeah, many arguments.
And
about
then they
who's going to do the cooking and whatnot.
Yeah, and they hear voices outside.
Hey, who is it, guys?
Huh?
Grip Hook.
Who is it?
It's Dean Thomas, Gryffindor artist.
And Grip Hook and Gornuk.
Gornuk.
Two and goblins.
Ginny's boyfriend.
Ginny's ex.
Aww.
And they are talking about their...
it's also, guys, we missed somebody.
Uh-oh.
What?
Cho Chang?
Not Cho Chang. It's Tonks'
father. Oh, Ted Tonks. That's right.
Ted Tonks?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ted Tonks.
And he ran because there were Death Eaters in his area. It's just showing you... I like this because this glimpse of the outside world, they get so little of it while they're on the run, and it shows you how dire things are, that if you are even suspected, you just have to pick up and get out of town and even just hide in the woods, you know?
It's just messed up. Do you think, like, they had some kind of, like, in neighboring countries, they had some kind of, like, asylum set up so people can just show up and, like...
I don't think the neighboring countries really came in handy for them during this war.
This sucks. Come on, world community, Wizengamot, where were you? How do you not know what's happening?
Well, I think they're being affected, like, I don't know, because in my opinion, the Wizarding World is smaller because they can travel so much more. They can just apparate over to another country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know you can't apparate, like, anywhere, because Voldemort had to be in apparition range when he was coming back, whatever that is. But the Wizarding World, I would imagine... Like, you know, in London, stuff's going down. Scotland's going to be just as, you know, hectic, and Ireland's just a hop, skip, and jump away. So imagine that they would all be in the same amount of trouble in a certain respect. I know it'd be more concentrated by the Ministry because, you know, Voldemort is running things through that now.
Yeah.
But
I mean, they could probably hide at Cliffs at the Park Cottage for a few days. But,
Yeah.
I mean, they basically, Dean ran because he's not sure if he's a pureblood or not. Ted Talks ran because he knows he's not a pureblood, but his wife is, so he just...
He's muggle-born.
Yeah.
And so he knows he has
you have to... Exactly. It's just amazing. They're clearing out a whole society. It's
disgusting.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's gross.
And then even the goblins, too, you know?
Yeah.
There's another one. There's Dirk.
Like Gornuk or something.
Yeah, and this is when they talk about...
No, Dirk. This guy, Dirk. Ted speaks to a guy named Dirk, and guess what Dirk does?
What?
Dirk said he got away. I was halfway to ask him about when I made a break for it, stunned Dawlish and nicked his broom.
Oh, come on.
I swear to God, it was easier than you'd think. I don't think he's quite right at the moment. Might be confounded.
I swear. I swear that she did it on purpose. I mean, of all characters to pick. I'll just pick Dawlish. Because when you read Dolph's character in Order of the Phoenix, did he seem like somebody that was like a boob that could be taken advantage of?
Well, he was.
And how he was written.
Well, it's not like he's out of character. What happened in that room, you know, he got kind of got put in his place then as well.
But it's Dumbledore, though. It's like anybody. Dumbledore can... He hassles...
But you can't... You didn't have enough to think that he wasn't a boob. Now she's just explaining, and yes, he is.
Well, to say that he got top marks on all of his newts, and he was the one that they picked to go confront Dumbledore, like he was one of their best.
Because he follows orders without being very intuitive or asking questions. That's why he's the ministry best. It doesn't speak a lot of you to be a ministry best in this situation.
Every military person has to take orders from whoever, regardless of whether or not they agree with it.
No kidding, but we're talking about the ministry in Harry Potter. We're not talking about the U.S. Army.
Well, we're talking about
the U.K.
You know, coming up with
military
with parallels here to people.
I'm not saying the quality of taking orders is what's good. I'm saying that the ministry values people who aren't intuitive and take orders without having questions and don't have much independent thinking of their own. Hence, Dawlish
and Umbridge.
And Umbridge. Ah, Palm.
Ooh, I just compared Umbridge and Dawlish. What did I just do?
Awful. Piss poor.
Well, this
Dawlish
is when they...
being a good orator is all.
Sure.
All right, so this conversation between three wizard dudes and two goblins, what do we start to find out?
About... How does the sword even get brought up? They talk about the sword is the...
Well, they talk about why the goblins are on the run. And the goblins in their only the goblins can sound high and mighty while they're sitting in a forest on the run from society. Only goblins, I swear. It's interesting.
They're really...
Gringotts is no longer under the sole control of my race. I recognize no wizarding master. So he left.
Okay, this is it. They're like, it's actually the next line that is the segue into that. It's funny. He said, there are things wizards don't recognize either. And then I don't get it, and that's when they talk about how the sword that the kids attempted to steal was a fake, and the ones that they put in the vault is a fake one, and then they knew that.
And such pride the goblins had that there was this ruckus made over this sword, and it was all for nothing. But then, of course, Harry, Ron, and Hermione know that Bill Weasley's sister is obviously Ginny.
Yeah, of course.
I like when Dirk asks him, if he believes that Snape killed Dumbledore. And Dean says, I know Harry Potter, and I reckon he's the real thing, the chosen one, or whatever you want to call it.
Nice.
John, you got a book around?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, that part, yeah, that's so crazy how they're talking about him, and like, well, where is he then? And just the Harry, that must have been so difficult just not to be like, I'm over here, help us out, but, you know?
And like, yeah.
But where he can't. You know,
they've gotten so much use out of those expandable ears, it's not even funny. Was there really no other way to listen in on conversations before the Weasley twins were born?
Well, I think it's just the most convenient.
And it's also one that hasn't been so born into such wide use that there's a counter charm.
Exactly.
They can use
there
an expandable ears. No, but it's not that bred into culture, so they don't have to... Nobody's guarding against expandable ears yet, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just easy access for them. It's like if there's more than one way to skin a cat type of thing, but you're going to use the method you're most comfortable with as long as it works. If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Mm.
All right, so Phineas Nigellus tells them what happened to Ginny and the rest who tried to steal the sword, which is that they just took them to the Forbidden Forest with Hagrid, which is like nothing, you know? So it should have been a clue right there, obviously, that Snape's not the Karrows.
Yeah, totally.
And they try to get Dumbledore there, and Phineas.
Yeah, knows. Like, can you get Dumbledore for us? And he's like, screw you, I'm not your manservant. But magic also doesn't quite work that way.
Yeah.
It makes a cool chapter, like, times two, that we're learning so much intricate things about magic we always theorized about to that point. About the portraits and about the food.
Food, the portraits, and then this is when they kind of put two and two together about why...
it doesn't have to be a muggle born or whatever to be ignorant about stuff. Like, I can't bring Dumbledore in my portrait. Only that doesn't work that way if you're outside of Hogwarts. He, like, tells him off.
Yeah, but he also drops an important clue.
the sword is what destroyed the ring, and that's when they kind of put two and two together about why it's why they Dumbledore left.
Well, it's not only that it destroyed the ring, but a goblin made weapons imbibe, take in that which strengthens them. So because Harry plunged it into the mouth of a basilisk in his second year, it's imbibed with basilisk venom. It is now something that can be used to kill a Horcrux, which is why Dumbledore was able to use it.
Yeah. Now tell me this. How bad, A, would it be if you had a sword like that dipped in a phoenix tear?
Huh? That would not be a very effective sword because you would cut somebody and it would heal them.
Well, if you were already cut and you ran the sword over the cut, it would heal the cut.
Do you guys want to talk about the Ron fight, or should we save the Ron fight for next time?
Let's save the Ron fight.
Okay, so next time the whole trio little world breaks apart. It breaks my heart. That's what happens next. All right.
Hermione cries and cries, and then the Harry Hermione shippers have their day.
And they have their couple months, actually.
Suddenly it's possible.
All right. Bye, peoples.
In the fan corner, a one-on-one interview with a new lucky fan each week.
Not me. Not Hermione, you.
It's so great about our charities that we do here in our fandom, but things have not always, they're not always easy and not always good. And there was a couple tough situations with Warner Brothers in working with the fans and stuff. You want to talk a little bit about some of the cases that you might have looked at and focused on in the book?
Yeah, there's definitely obviously the Potter War stuff. There's some of the copyright stuff they've gotten into over the years. What's not in this book is the lexicon thing. Is the RDR books. And the reason for that is that I was halfway done with the book when it began. I finished the book in January of 2008, which is 3 months before the trial. And at that time, we thought it was going to be maybe a year, 2 years before the trial because they were still in the very early phases. In March, the judge announced that the trial would be in April. And my final deadline I handed in a draft, edited it, gave it back, was, you know, a week after that. And that's kind of the secondary reason. The primary reason is that the timeline of this book precludes it. The timeline goes from January through August-ish of 2008, and then there's an epilogue. And the epilogue is kind of a tying up of loose ends, a kind of deep breath afterwards. And to get into a legal situation, which A, we didn't have an outcome to yet, B, would just totally throw everything up in the air in the epilogue. It's not really good narratively. That doesn't mean I'm not going to write about it or I'm not going to update the book with it. I probably will write an update detailing that whole situation. But for now, it's not. I mean, it's regrettable that it happened at all, but be on the timeline that it did because I wasn't able to deal with it. Yeah, but most, I mean, it does take an honest look at what's happened. I mean, Warner Brothers is not excused from their Potter War thing, and they're very honest about it. You know, They talked to me about it. They said, we made a mistake. We tried to take it back, and you know we're trying to make up for it. It does talk about some problems they had with early merchandising. Like, for instance, there was boys' underwear with the phrase Wingardium Leviosa.
Yeah.
And never tickle a sleeping dragon. Like, that stuff made it to prototype phase in the early days. They didn't quite know what they were dealing with, and that's addressed honestly and candidly in this book. So,
You really do go, and she really does go and speak to many, many people. I mean, not just, I mean, you talk to David Heyman but a lot of people, as well as the publishers and people that edit the books. And it's really an extraordinary, I think you put a lot of detail, but you also talk to people who covered the event. Like, I remember there was one instance when you talked to the lady from NPR, which was really, really, really cool. And I, as a fan, enjoyed that. But one of the people I really wasn't sure if you were going to be able to speak with was someone who is perhaps not our biggest fan. and I'm referring to Laura Mallory, who of course is a woman here in Georgia who has gone to great lengths to have the books removed from the school shelves.
Yes.
Just what was that like for you to go and just one, to even get the interview to talk to her because she doesn't do a lot of press, and then two, as a leading member of our community, your high profile Harry Potter fan, meeting with this high profile person who's against Harry Potter, basically. I mean, what was that like?
Well, it took a couple of phone calls to get it. She'd been harassed by Harry Potter fans. Another podcast would call her and leave abusive messages, and she wasn't being treated with respect. So I left her a couple of messages and finally just said, look, it's really important that I talk to you. I promise I'm going to treat you honestly. I can't say that I can't say you'll love it, but I'm going to do my best. And she responded to that and called me, and I went down to Georgia and I spent 2 hours with her in an IHOP. And the chapter, I had somebody very condescendingly say to me right before I went, remember, you're not going down there to change her mind. You're going down there as a reporter. And aside from feeling that person was out of his or her league and shouldn't be, pontificating to me on my job, I had to be honest to what happened down there. What happened was two ideological opposites. The biggest fan, or, obviously not the, but one of the biggest fans, but in her mind, I probably constituted the Harry Potter fan, And then we have the most vocal against,
Right.
And sitting across the table from each other, and I had to be honest to what happened there. And so the chapter that has resulted is a little bit of, a friend of mine called it theater.
Yeah.
I couldn't just write about her in an ancillary way. That became the story. Sitting there with her became the story, and it just felt more real because it was so frustrating, and it was such an emotionally charged meeting because I just wanted to shake her and say, you will like these books. Why must you be like this? The messages are good. And on the other side of the table, I think she was thinking the same thing. How could you like anything with what's kept in it, Omer? So it became this real tug of war, and it was so fun in a way once I was removed from it. But in that moment, I wanted to kind of pull my hair out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was so glad that she sat down with me, and I tried to be honest. I hope that when she reads it, she's not going to be offended. You can't be honest about your feelings without recognizing your negative feelings.
Right.
So I really do hope that she takes it in the spirit that it's meant.
I feel that this woman is misguided in her efforts, although she is quite earnest in her beliefs, and it would be easy to go cross that boundary. And I don't believe, personally, I'll just say it bluntly, that you did not do that, and you were very fair to her in that chapter. And it's actually, I think, one of your better chapters. That's my opinion. But unbiased reporting, but it's true. It's actually very, very, being very candid, very honest. That's what's so neat about this book, is that you can go, for me, as reading this, I just had to keep putting it, when I put the book down, I just had to stop and walk around, and we were doing other things, but it took me on such an extraordinary personal flashback to my own adventures and my own feelings in the fandom. But when I was reading about Muller Mallory, it's so hard to dissect, to step away from, because here's a woman that really just doesn't, she thinks what we're doing is evil, and I think that was just, wow.
Yeah, and several times she said, you could do well with your book. Not in terms of sales. She means that I could use it to be, use this opportunity with an audience to be a missionary for her cause in my book. And I kept telling her that that's not the point. It's not the point. It's not the point to preach. I'm just trying to kind of explain what's happening here and why you're against it and why that's hard for Harry Potter fans to get and why it's hard for you to get, That's one of the harder, because I went through a couple of drafts, but one of the more gratifying chapters, right?
Yeah. There's also a lot of fun chapters, I will say. There's a really, really cool thing about a really, really cool phenomenon that's happening right now in our fandoms called Rock. Yes.
That was fun. I spent a week with Harry in the Pot. I mean, that was like the opposite of going to Georgia for this very frustrating meeting, was spending a week on the road with Harry and the Potters. And before, I barely knew them well at that time. I was friends with Paul, but kind of not really, And then I spent a week with them on the road, and it was just, oh God, there's nothing. It reminds you how important it is to get out from behind your computer and go out into the community and meet people in the community and have fun with them. Because when you see what they do, it's great. That was a fun chapter.
It was, and it was fun for us too, because kind of along the same time, this is the next thing I want to talk about, is that we happened, our Pottercast, I think it was the first podcast to actually tour, and we kind of got to do a couple shows with these guys, and it was the most extraordinary time for me, because not only was I getting to live out my rock and roll fantasy, goofily as possible, but they're used to that by now, but it was just this amazing time because we were right on getting, just in a few months right before the release of the book, and and the excitement was just, I mean, literally the adrenaline was right there. It was extraordinary. I wanted to talk to you, Bill, though, about what it was like for you going along as we're doing our podcast. We're getting ready to have the release of this book. And what it was like for you each day as we were driving around, and you got 50,000 trillion phone calls wanting to do interviews.
That was so funny. I remember you guys started making faces after a while, because it was such a predictable, like, listening to my phone conversations from one side. Every time my phone rang, I would pick it up, and as soon as you heard my next answer, like, oh yeah, sure, now's an okay time.
Uh-huh.
You guys knew it was an interview, and you would start making faces. Because basically at this time, and it's not like a flattering thing to me to say, that I was the person at the top of the staff list of one of the largest Harry Potter sites out there. So if you're a reporter, you're looking to go right to, you know, you need an interview. So people would call us constantly from every state. I have no idea how many interviews I did in that crazy 2 months. And it became the same questions. So what will you do after the book? You know, do you think that Harry's going to live or die? You know, what do you think is going to happen at the end? Is Voldemort going to be defeated? What's it like as a Harry Potter fan coming to the end of all this? And it was like literally an exercise in farce. It was a repeated conversation over months. And so it was really funny, because I think at one point I was driving, and this was in a state where I could be on the phone, so that was okay. I was driving, and I had to keep stopping the car because I was on the radio, and we were cutting in and out on the radio because of the service. So I kept having to find like a good service spot and stopping the car, even though we were late to our podcast, to finish this interview and then get back on the road. It was completely wild, and it just was a trait of the larger picture. What was happening at the time is that how Harry Potter was a media all-consuming frenzy.
It was.
You know, and so, no, that was, you know, interviews are they're fun and flattering when they happen at a normal pace.
Yeah.
But in those 2 months, there was one time we were in Los Angeles, and reporters in New York would assume that by 9 o'clock in New York, I was awake.
Yeah.
So they would call me at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And wake me up. And they were like, are you kidding? It's 9 o'clock and you're not awake. I'd be like, no, it's 6 a.m. I'll call you back. You know, like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, there was one reporter that I told to bite me by accident.
That was a great story. No, don't give it away, but it's hysterical.
I'm not
going to
give it away. It's
so funny. She did. She did say it too.
It's really funny.
But that's what, you know what, to me was more extraordinary, because we were in this amazing media frenzy. I mean, both the film and the book were within, you know, 10 days of each other, and this amazing thing. Who would have thought that day back in 9/11, and you're talking to your Harry Potter friends, that suddenly, you know, 5 years from now, 7 years from now, you would be doing right in the middle of this enormous, extraordinary thing, that this website would be so big, we would have so many different facets in our entire fandom, that fan fiction, you know, crafts, you know, fan art, wizard rock, everything would be happening. That must have been just really extraordinary. It was for me. I don't know how you felt.
Writing this book and going back to that time where I was just out of college, really frustrated, taking it out on everybody around me, how I was, you know, highly educated and very underemployed, feeling useless and like my life was going to be in an office as a secretary, even though I had come from a very, you know, highly rated school and I was qualified for a job, feeling like I would never get there and my dreams would never be realized. Then getting into the marketplace and thinking of this fun hobby I had on the side, but my real career being with my newspaper and being in quote unquote real journalism, and then seeing that through to the end now where it is my real job. This book is my real job. My life as a writer is starting, and I never, never, ever in a million years did I think that when I was, oh, I like this site, I'll send them some news now and then, or, oh, I like this site, I'll post some news on it now and then. Hey, we should be doing more coverage. I'll push for more coverage. And then John starts bothering me. We should expand the site. We should do more on the site. You know, at each step along the way, you don't realize what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I have this kind of vague idea for a book. I really want to do it. A couple years later, I have a casual conversation with a friend at a birthday party, and the next day she emails me and says she's an agent and she wants to sign me, and she wants to, you know, get going on this, and am I interested? And, you know, and all of a sudden you turn around and think, and your dreams happen just because you were following. My friend calls it, and actually it's a quote from somebody else. Unfortunately, I'm very bad with quotes, and I don't know the famous person who said this, but it's following your bliss. And that's all it is, and it never looked like it at the time. It didn't look like it when I was out of college and out of work playing on a Harry Potter site with everybody rolling eyes at me going, what are you doing? You're 21 years old. You're playing on a Harry Potter. What are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's fun. It's fun. It makes me happy. And I just, you know, you just keep doing it. And all of a sudden you turn around and you can't believe where it's led, you know? So no, never, ever, ever did I think that this is what would happen.
Well, for me personally, it's been amazing because I know that you've always been wanted to be a writer. I mean, just in your journalism, but just to be able to sit and watch you this come to fruition is very satisfying for me as your friend and colleague. But there's also another writer that we should get mentioned.
Oh, her.
Who is really the heart of this story, too. And I do want to talk just a little bit about this. You got to interview Joe for a book.
Yeah, that's
what?
Crazy. I have no idea how that happened. Well, no, I should explain. This book got sold because I wrote a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
A proposal is really, I hate them. I hate writing them, and I suppose in the likely event I'll have to write another one, it will, you know, at least I'll have done it now, but
yeah.
The actual writing of a proposal I really don't like because it's not writing. It's you write these sample chapters which you feel embarrassed even handing in because they're so preliminary. It's like first or second drafts, which are never what ends up in a final copy. So that's your sample. You have to write a bio of yourself. You have to tell people why they should pay you money to publish a book and why you're the one. So it's a very self-aggrandizing document, and you have to like skate that line between self-aggrandizing and boasting and arrogant, you know, but never, and even though I did have a semi-relationship with her at the time, never did I say, I know J.K. Rowling, she'll be interviewed for this, but you know, never.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that. That's, at least to me, that's, you don't do it. So, but I knew that I wanted to ask her, and I was chickening out as the year
yeah.
in which I was writing went on, and I realized at time, oh, I'll just give her till Deathly Hallows comes out. Oh, she's on her tour. I'll wait till after her tour. And then I couldn't wait till after her tour because finally a couple of friends said to me, Melissa, if you don't send that letter, you will always regret it, and time is ticking. You got to send it right now. And
mm-hmm.
I was kind of having a chicken attack. And then, so I finally did it. I sent it out. And she got back to me almost immediately saying, I would love to be interviewed. Oh, actually, what happened first is that I got a call from her agent, Christopher Little. A very friendly. It's not like an intimidation thing. He's very friendly. He just wanted to know more about the book. And I think the worry was that I was writing a biography. Even though I told her, you know, I'm not writing about your personal life, I'm not writing about anybody's personal life, this is about the phenomenon. I think he just wanted to kind of meet me and talk about it, so he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately I heard from Joe saying, I'd love to, please come over here, let's do it, you know? And so I went thinking I was going to get maybe a couple of hours with her, and we sat in her house and talked in front of, she put up a fire, you know, it was very cozy in last fall, and we weren't finished by the end of the day. She had to take her dog to the vet. And when I say take her dog to the vet, I mean, you guys, she's close to a billionaire, whatever she is. I watched this woman like swing her leg over her dog, fighting with him to try to get the collar on with coat hanging off, you know, like she's just a mom. Like I've seen that scene in my house my whole life growing up. That's,
mm-hmm.
it's really wonderful to see that. So I think people enjoy hearing this. She's just this very,
wow.
She's not
real.
Absolute in any way.
She
exactly.
She doesn't have people do it or house elves do that.
No,
sure.
She was, you know, wrangling her dog to get out. It was really, it's really wonderful. So we just weren't finished. And she said, well, are you here tomorrow? And I had specifically laid out time for that purpose. And I said, yeah. And so we scheduled for the next day. All told, there were about 8 hours of recording.
Unbelievable. 8 hours with Joe.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
And you were in New York when I found out that,
yes.
that I was
yes.
going to get the interview, or when I felt that I was going to get the interview. And I remember that you and John and, our friends, was it Sam who was there?
Yes.
And Matt Giacomo were in my kitchen when I came in, and everybody was crying, and we all had a drink in celebration, and it was just because I didn't ever think that she would be interested in that. Not because she hasn't, you know, she stayed very hands-off with books,
mm-hmm.
mostly, in the past. Unless there's a real fear that they are appropriating her content, she just leaves them alone, you know? So there's all these books out there, and I just assumed that she would be doing this, just leave it alone, and I didn't think I had any right on which to expect anything. And so when she was very open about it, not only as a fan, but as a reporter, to get that interview is oh God, it was just huge. And so the whole time I was there, I couldn't believe it. I had hired, basically, her saying yes opened the door to a ton of other people saying yes, her agents, yeah. editors, publishers. I mean, anybody who I needed to talk to would. As you can imagine, it was easier to get an interview with David Heyman once I was able to say J.K. Rowling is being interviewed yeah. in the book. And she's, you know, she's okay with her name being used that way. She understands how it works. And so all of a sudden, it was like the entire book changed. And so I hired a personal assistant for those 2 months. Her name was Jo, and she was British, but it's not that Jo.
Yeah.
And I know, weird, right? And yeah. She basically came to America for a few months. And was at my house every day. She was looking up things while I was writing. She was fact checking things. She would, if I was looking tired, she would get me coffee, like, you know, and she was with me in Edinburgh while I was there. And she just, the only way I could gauge what a big deal this was for me and how it was reflecting on my face was watching hers, because she's a big Harry Potter fan. And she was just beaming for me the whole weekend. It was really a very, very special weekend, and she's a very special person.
You know, again, I hate to, this is weird for me, because normally I talk to people that I don't normally like talk to outside and hang out with and stuff, but it was just such a squeeful moment, I must tell you, that I got to talk to you right after you talked to Joe, and it was the greatest thing. Oh my God, it's been like, how much did I talk about people on it? It was just awesome. Let's make this clear, and you've talked about this a little bit on your website, www.harriethistory.com, that this, the book itself is not just canon, not just the 8 hours of regurgitating your conversation with Joe. It's not, right?
No, as a matter of fact, there's almost no canon. We talk about the phenomenon. That was the hard part, sitting with Joe. Mm-hmm. Me being a big fan, her being the author of the books, we both badly wanted to talk about canon. But we had a specific amount of time, and we needed to talk about the phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And I had so much to get through. But we just kept, it was kind of like a bumper car. You know, mm-hmm. you think you're on track for a second, and boom, there we go, talking about canon again, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, but that stuff's not in the book. And every time I would find myself while I was writing trying to shoehorn that stuff into the book, it just didn't happen, and I had to cut it, you know?
Yeah.
So that stuff's going to go on HarryHistory.com. I don't want people who read the Vault 27 entries, as I call them, on Harry Potter, on HarryHistory.com, mm-hmm. to think that that's representative of what's in the book. Most often it won't be. So there's some stuff that's extra stories and extra bits about the phenomenon that I'll put up there that are representative of what's in the book, but aren't in the book,
right.
you know?
Right. But there is stuff, though, that Joe does. I mean, I remember on several occasions reading, just going, oh, wow, I didn't know that. And it came from information directly from Joe. So we are getting some new stuff from Joe, but it's just, it may not be a new fact about, like, you know, Hufflepuff, although I would have loved that. But, you know.
We didn't really talk about Hufflepuff. We talked about a couple of things. There's definitely some remarks on shipping.
Is there anything to do with pumpkins? Pumpkin pies?
I mean, it's in there. Pumpkin pie, not specifically, but there is,
sorry.
The shipping comment.
Yeah.
I wish, like, I'm not going to give it away here.
Don't give it away. Don't do it.
It's interesting.
But, so squeeful. But that's what's so amazing. And like you said, you did get to speak to these other people, and you just do get a really good, tangible collection of things that were actually going on behind the scenes that we didn't know about. I mean, it's easy enough to Google, okay, so-and-so lawsuit. Okay, fine. You can find that. But this is what stuff that's actually was going on. And for me, as a fan, even though I was in the same fandom as you, it's a new, I don't want to say it's a new looking way of looking at it, but it certainly was an extraordinary, unexpected journey for me to read this book.
See, that makes me really happy. That makes me really, I mean, Publishers Weekly just posted a review, and they said that the very flattering thing, the best thing they could have said, which is fans will see themselves in these pages and friends and others might finally understand their friends.
Yeah.
Which was really a goal. It was a huge goal. I wanted fans to feel like their story had been told, and I wanted outsiders to feel like they would kind of more understand the pathos and the ethos and the emotion of fandom and why we do it, and, you know, and how a 27-year-old, because at the time that's what I was, a 27-year-old could be an adult professional, but also deeply in love with this world and having fun reporting on it, you know? So it's really gratifying to hear much more to hear you say that you found your journey present in this book. That's what I want for people reading the book. And I know it's not an author's job to say what people should be taking away. And I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, that's not, whatever you take away is whatever you take away. But what I hope happens is that you recognize and celebrate your time in the Harry Potter fandom.
What a beautiful, it's true, it is. Go read it. Harry History comes out is released on November 4th from Simon & Schuster and Penguin in Australia and I don't know how many others, but
yeah.
Coming
to on Harry
bookstore near you.
A
yes.
Bookstore, hopefully every bookstore that there is. And there's going to be events soon. We'll talk about them on Pottercast as soon as they are confirmed.
Oh, yes. And there is parts about Pottercast in there. If you were there for the.
No, you're a main character in this book. You and John.
It just kills me because my squeeze are a character. Come on.
You know what was weird? What was truly like outer body weird for me? Mm-hmm. The reading at Terminus and reading your voices, doing your voices while you and John were in the room. And Paul.
Yes. Yes,
in the room. I'm thinking, oh, this is just going to be embarrassing. So
it was awesome, though. But everybody was so into it. See, and you're right. I hope people, I don't want to say go out and buy it because I know money, you know, but I just think you should give this book a chance. And I know that there are naysayers and, oh, we don't need it. We've lived through it. No, this is a book well worth reading as a fan. There are a plethora of fan books out there, but I think this one is a different than anything out there, and I think it's a head and shoulders above anything else, and read it and love it and enjoy it.
So I can't tell you how great it is to hear you say these things. Watching your friends react to something you've created is very strange.
Well, Melissa would know. She would. I would tell her what I think too.
Yes.
So if I hated that, tell her.
Yes, she would.
Yay, Squeeze Melly! Thank you. No, thank you. It's awesome.
So I'm going to see you guys very soon, right?
Melissa's coming to visit California.
Okay.
It's a good thing you have an Aunt Muriel in California.
I do have a friend out there that I'm going to visit, but while I'm doing that, I'm going to go see the guys.
If you have enough time.
Who are you visiting?
She's her,
a friend of mine is doing a show.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
In the theater area in LA, which is very small compared to the theater in New York, but I said
ridiculously
I would see it, so
small.
I found a cheap flight. You know, the flights air race right now are so cheap. I don't know if you guys have checked this out, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because the economy sucks. Nobody's traveling.
Coming down a little bit.
Nice change, nice break.
Yeah, gasoline's coming down a little bit too.
Well, it's fall.
Or petrol, for all you uckers.
Petrol. You know, we complain about gas prices, but it's nothing compared to what they pay in the UK.
Well, they shouldn't have taxed us like they did back in the revolutionary times, sir. We'd all be living together still.
They need their own bed. They can lie in it.
Exactly.
Their own taxi bed.
Well, they drive dumb manual cars. I couldn't, for the life of me, drive a stick.
You're the guy.
And now that was bitching about English people. Tune in next week.
Tune in next week. Same time.
Yeah. Tune in next week when we have no English listeners.
Oh,
none.
I love them.
Gone.
They talk so pretty.
Oh.
Speaking of English listeners, we have a few, quite a few English people involved with our acting troupe.
Nice.
What's happening there?
Oh, well, the acting troupe is such a intense undertaking to try and get an entire cast of folks around the world on to record an acting session. That has taken a while to get everybody together for recording, but we have very capable managers involved with this project, and they are doing their best to get everybody organized and recorded, and hopefully we will have a finished chapter one for everybody next couple of weeks, hopefully next week.
I'm so excited.
It will be fun. The story is amazing, and
sounds really cool from what I remember.
It will be very fun, so stay tuned for that.
Hey guys, my first book signing has been set.
Aww.
Ooh.
It's November 5th. At the Borders in Columbus Circle, New York.
Very cool.
That's a cool Borders.
It is. We had a podcast there once.
We did have a podcast there once.
Yeah. And it's a great building. And then we had dinner up in the somewhere up in
there.
Oh
my God, the ridiculously expensive. Let's go somewhere real quick before we get on the road. Restaurant.
Yeah.
God.
So expensive. It was terrible. And then, we were out. We were over to Jersey. Or no, we were back to my apartment for the night, and then we went to Jersey. That's our first tour. Frankie, you weren't there.
I wasn't there.
No, next year is gonna be fun. We just don't know exactly what's happening because we have LeakyCon, and then hopefully we'll be going back to Comic-Con.
Comic-Con!
Hopefully doing something in the area of Comic-Con, which will be a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh.
Doing like a live podcast in San Diego while Comic-Con's going on.
Yeah. Comic-Con.
We're good. Shout-outs to
Eric Bowling.
Rolling
like rolling. Exactly, rolling like rolling. That's him. Holy cow, that's really funny. Okay, you know, so lots of stuff going on. Hopefully next summer. We need to recuperate from this summer for us, guys.
Seriously, I know.
But, like, I feel like if we set something up early enough and we get, like all that time to buzz about it and get the word out to everybody in those cities, we could have, like, some massive shows.
I think so, too. So we'll talk about that after the first of the year, okay? We'll plan before Christmas, and then we'll start talking about it first of the year.
Oh, for sure.
Except for us talking about it right now.
Except for this little teaser.
Little teaser.
Anyway. Oh, we've missed Sue this week in the drums.
I know.
Sue is in one of the Jingle Bell songs. Ooh, I just gave it away.
What?
She's mentioned.
No, she doesn't sing, but she's in it.
Whose song?
Mentioned Sue?
Yeah, I'm telling you, the Jingle Bells is going to be amazing this year. Wait.
In the house.
I know. We're only printing... Last year we printed 3,000. We're only printing 2,000 hard copies.
Oh my gosh.
It'll be on iTunes 6 weeks after we first start making it available, but it's you need to get them as soon as we make this public, because it's an amazing album already, and I've only gotten half the songs in, and it's going to have a lot of music, and it will be a very limited edition. And if you are the guy who's got 14 of the old Jingle Spells and you put them on eBay, I've got a beef, my friend.
That
was a charity.
How much
was
he charging for?
I don't know. I think it's like $10.99. I don't know how he got 14 of them, to be honest, and because he's charging less than he would have had to pay to get them.
Oh.
So I don't.
Well, I guess
it's not a cover.
If he's not making money off of it, and they were paid for, unless he bought like 14 at like a show that one of the bands sold it at.
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, you band guys, you Wizard Rockers.
What if it's one of the band guys?
It's Chuck's Corner. I don't know who that is.
Mm. What if it's one of the bands?
Well, if it's one of the bands, that's fine. They were fine to sell them however they wanted to sell them. You know. What I worry about is that this is not, there are no pictures of this item. I worry that it's actually just copies.
It could be someone got the item.
Okay.
What?
It's not okay.
That is not okay. That's illegal.
This is very illegal. This is for charity. So, above all things, there's a moral thing. So I, if you're that guy, go to Chuck's Corner on eBay and look up his Jingle Spells auction and email him and ask what they are. Ask him for pictures of these CDs. Prove that they're real CDs. If they're real CDs, fine. He got them legitimately, and the money that he paid went to charity. If they are copies, we're going to nab them.
Yeah, they should have the Jingle Spells artwork on the actual CD.
And they should be shrink-wrapped. Each CD was individually shrink-wrapped. There should be clear wrap over each CD.
I would even want to see the actual CD first, because you can re-shrink-wrap something, but it would be very hard to duplicate that type of printing.
No, but they can't see the actual... But if they see the actual CD, then they've broken into the, you know. But yeah, I want to see pictures. Get pictures from this guy.
Yeah.
If it's not this guy, then this guy is not for real. So okay, guys, it's that time.
Oh, it's not that time, is it?
Yeah, it's just about that time.
It makes me sad. I feel like we never do the show anymore.
Except for the times when we do the show.
We do it every week.
Yeah.
You know what will be fun?
Hmm.
This is probably crazy, but what if we, like, did stuff, like, every day?
Huh.
Like what?
I don't know.
Like, nothing major. Like, there's four of us. We could come out with...
5 days.
Kind of just, like, 5 days in a work week, but who wants to do anything on, like, the end of the week? What if, like, each of us, like, messed around for, like, a day and did, like, a video or, like, a mini-podcast and thoughts online?
That's a good idea.
Like a video?
I mean, it could be like... I mean, yeah, I guess we all have Macs now. We could use
Is there any way you can record a video and show people that on a wide scale?
I don't know. Is there a way?
I don't know.
We have a video gallery, but probably it'd be easier to use YouTube.
YouTube? What's YouTube?
That's a good idea, John.
I like that idea. We just thought of it just a second.
Like a 3-minute daily kind of something about Harry Potter, like a blog.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But it's okay if it's not always, absolutely about Harry Potter.
It's got to be somewhat about Harry Potter. If it's
see,
about
I have an idea. I have an idea. I want to just take a camera and, run around outside and ask people about, random canon things and see what they say.
That's Harry Potter.
That could be funny.
And my camera's in my desktop, so I can't carry that around anywhere, but I can do, with my little camera,
You have a digital video camera?
Yeah, I guess I do. And I have lots of backed up stuff on my hard drive that's my personal Potter stuff really isn't Harry Potter news. It will be fun to show people.
Well, how about all four of us have a day, and then the fifth day, every fourth week, one of us is responsible for something beyond video blog, something clever, running around with a camera in their city and talking about nonsense with.
So people. Once a month, each of us does that.
Once a month, each of us has a Friday to do something crazy.
That'd be fun. Let's do it. Do you know there's nothing on the Pottercast YouTube right now? Nothing.
That's really sad.
Go start subscribing to the Pottercast.
I could draw something.
Frankie, you could have an animation every month.
I could just have a doodle.
It'll be like a slideshow of Frack every week.
A Frankie doodle.
I don't know what you talk about today, guys, so I'm going to draw Harry Potter. Or I can I can do drawing tutorials. That'd be kind of fun.
It could be how to draw the Pottercaster.
Some happy trees.
Oh, my God, do it.
I'll have to do that.
Do it.
That'd be fun.
And we could do... okay, this is what you do, guys. Go to the Pottercast name on YouTube. YouTube.com/Pottercast. Go start subscribing, and then we're going to get this going. Hopefully it'll be faster than one of our other ideas, because usually it takes, 17 weeks between idea and execution.
Yeah. It would be fun. We could just, hit the record button on iMovie as we're recording Pottercast and just, randomly toss up one side of the conversation, when we record.
That'd be cool for the Friday. Record the whole thing, and then edit it down to, 3 minutes.
Yeah. But even if say we just recorded the bit by bit or whatever, and I could just hit record for a few minutes and they'd have a little sneak preview of the bit by bit. Actually, that might be really boring. Who wants to just sit and listen to me talk about the bit by bit? It would need all four of us.
It would have to be after the fact.
Yeah.
They listen to the show and if it's just 2 minutes, it'd be kind of fun just to see.
Yeah.
Because when I record podcasts, I'm working out and I'm all buff.
Oh, that's basically what I'm doing. I'm fighting fires. I'm a volunteer fireman.
I'm nursing kittens back to health.
Yes. With tears.
With my tears.
When you see the sick kitties, they make you cry, but luckily your tears are an elixir.
Oh, I got that. Okay.
Cats.
That's not as random. I thought it was just random. I just cry in the kitten's mouth.
You have to give props. We have one friend on the Pottercast YouTube channel, and the person's name is BELEBUTRFLYO3. You are the very first person to friend
YouTube
channel. They get something. Email us if you heard this.
They get it.
Would be surprised.
T-shirt.
staff@pottercast.com, and we'll send you something, just like I owe many other people things. But yeah, go subscribe to us, because we're going to start putting stuff up there, Monday.
You know, people,
what days
to,
do we want to do?
For, contests?
Of course we are.
So we have, a basement full of old first edition, leaky Pottercast shirts and things.
We do. We have a ton. A ton.
Yeah, I mean,
of the first, the ones that said you know who, we know where.
Yeah, we should have more giveaways.
Okay, you give those away. You set that up.
Well, I mean, there's some things that we'll probably just never sell. You know, however many tours we have.
No, I know. I'm just saying, it's the machine of getting that person's address, putting it in the thing, getting to the post office. That's not Melissa's forte.
Certainly it doesn't need to be Melissa's forte, but certainly
forte?
In our list of volunteers, come out with somebody who can be responsible for jotting down an address on a label.
And coming to New York and getting the thing to put in that label and then sending it out?
No. Well, let's...
Think I'm gonna zap it over, materialize it in their apartment?
Brainstorm about this.
Okay. Maybe Melissa's mom can get on the action from her. Okay, goodbye.
Oh, is that the end of the show? Do we have to keep twiddling?
16-minute wrap-up, guys.
It's the end of the show, as we know.
Who's going to twiddle?
I guess we have to keep twiddling them dials.
Yes, the next password will be Sue's back.
Sue's back.
Keep each other safe. Keep faith.
Good night.
Good night.
We missed it.
Dobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks to our Scooby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on Podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit Podcast.com.